boyhood, your family, its activities, how you got started playing baseball.
Now you got to read yours, he says, too.
Oh, did he say that? Okay, yeah.
All right. Riggs, please talk a while about your boyhood, your family and its activities, how you got started playing baseball, how, when, and where you got into organized ball, your minor league experience, and your signing with Cleveland.
Yeah. I was born in Hale County, Alabama, 1898, January the 5th. And I had two brothers and one sister. And my father was a rural mail carrier. And my brothers played baseball. One of them pitched for the University of Alabama. The other one played in the Georgia-Alabama League. And my brother, after he graduated from Alabama, he had a job at Gunnersville, Alabama. But I'm getting a little bit ahead of myself. While I was about 15 years old, I played all up and down the railroad down there.
Semi-pro ball.
Semi-pro ball, yeah. And all the little towns around Utah, Greensboro, Livingston, Dallas, from them, had a baseball team. That's about the only recreation we had during the summertime.
Would they give you $2
for playing? Every now and then I get about $2 to play sometime. But anyway, when I went to Gunnersville, my brother got a job teaching there and coaching. So I high school, yeah, and I played football, baseball, and played a little basketball. And then I entered university in 1917 and played my freshman year on the football team. And the next spring, I played baseball. And, excuse me, in the next fall, we didn't have a football team because of World War One. And then I played two more years of football and baseball. And then our coach was from, Zen Scott, was from Cleveland. And he took me down to New Orleans to try with the Cleveland Indians. And they signed me for $300. And I came back and played Alabama. You could play then after you signed, so you hadn't played with them, you could sign with them. And then in 1921, Cleveland came through the South playing baseball. And by the way, I did train with them in Dallas, Texas, too. And Wambsganss had an arm broken, and Lunny, the infielder, had a Charlie horse or something. They didn't have any other infielder except Dr. Joe Evans, and he was playing outfielder at the time. And so Speaker Ward and asked if I could come and open up the season. And Dr. Denny, University of Alabama, said that he didn't think I ought to go because I had one more year of football to play. But I saw Dr. Baldwin, and he said I could come back and finish school. So I went and went to Cleveland and opened up the season in St. Louis, the St. Louis Browns. They had a good team at that time, the Browns. And I played, worked out the first day and then played second base the second day. Got two base hits and didn't get a chance at second base. Then I hung around Cleveland then after Wambsganss got back in for broken arm, utility man, kind of.
Let me interrupt there, Papa, and ask you the second question so I can record it so he can keep track.
And the second question was, tell me your emotions and what happened in your first game in the majors, which you already touched on. And then you must have been pretty frustrated during your first four seasons, playing about halftime, yet hitting 330, 339, 319, and 370. When you were behind Wambsganss, Joe, and Gardner, it was understandable that you had trouble breaking through, but with Rube Lutsky at third base in 1923 and 1924 and hitting only 256 and 243, how could they keep your bat out of the everyday lineup?
Well, in between time there, I pinch hitting and was playing some, and they had traded Wormskins to Boston and intended for me to play second base, and I tripped over the first baseman, Ud Shealy, with the White Sox, and fell on my knee, and I couldn't walk for a couple of months. So they...
What year was that?
That was, I can't find anything, about 23, I think. So Speaker told me he thought that me, I did try third base some, but I wasn't a very good third base. And Speaker told me he wanted to send me down to Kansas City to learn to play the outfield. And so they did in June 1925. I think that's what it was, 25. Yeah. And while I was there, they got a chance to get a second baseman from Indianapolis, Johnny Hodapp. And so they sent me and four or five more fellas down to Kansas City for Johnny Hodapp. And I went over there, and I think I hit 325 that year down in the minor league. Then next spring, Dorney Bush was managing. Next spring, we trained at Hot Springs, Arkansas, and I hit pretty good and was hitting pretty good in the season when it started. And I think I was hitting about 370 or somewhere along up there. And so the Cubs bought me, and they sent Shannon, a shortstop, and an outfielder, I forgot his name now, down there for me and paid a little some extra, I presume. So then I was in Chicago, and I stayed from 26 to 34, as the records show, and that's about all.
One other point, Wubba. When the Cubs got you, you were in Indianapolis. You'd gone from Kansas City.
That's right.
Kansas City to Indianapolis.
Yeah.
Okay. All right, the third question was, how was Tris Speaker as a manager, a person, and a player?
Tris was a good spoke, we called him. He was a nice fella and a great center fielder.
All right, there it goes.
I got my letter
here. And it's doing fine. All right. You had come in a little bit about Speaker as a manager and as a person. Did you talk to him about as a player?
I said he was a great center fielder and a great ball player.
Were any better center fielders than him?
Not at that time, no.
All right, question number four. What happened in 1925 when you played only 19 games and had a .296 average?
Well, I had been pinch hitting, and I don't really know what happened. As I said before, the Speaker told me he thought he'd send me down since I looked like I wasn't going to make an infielder and learn to be an outfielder since I was pretty fast and could catch the ball and hit pretty good.
All right, question number five. Were you sold to the Cubs or traded? And if traded, for whom?
I think I mentioned that, but I was traded to the Cubs from Indianapolis, and they sent a shortstop down there, Shannon, and an outfielder. I've forgotten the outfielder's name now.
Any money involved?
I don't know where there was any money or not. I didn't get anything. They gave me a little bit of salary, and I was getting down there about $1,000 more.
Why don't you tell them what you signed for with the Cubs? It won't hurt.
Well, when I went up there, Mr. John Size, I joined him in Boston, I think, and John Size was his vice president, and he signed me for $6,500. He said if I did bet he might give me some more next year.
All right. Let's see. Question number six. Obviously, you didn't find the National League pitchers any great mystery either. 8 straight years at well over 300. And just as evidently, you became a standout outfielder. Did you notice any real difference between the two leagues?
They always said that the American League was a fastball league and the National League was a curveball, but I couldn't tell much difference since I hit the same thing in both leagues.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, Papa, in recent years they've said that the two leagues kind of have a different strike zone. And was that the case then, do you think? Do you think the umps call them any different in the two leagues?
Well, different now than it was then. They don't call that high ball anymore around your shoulders. They look like they come way down on you there. I imagine a fellow ought to hit more now if he didn't have to hit that high ball up there.
All right. Let's see, where are we? Question 7. Comment on Joe McCarthy as a manager. Likewise for Rogers Hornsby and Charlie Grimm. First, Joe McCarthy.
McCarthy was the best manager I ever played under. I played under 4-5. And Hornsby was pretty strict, but he was a little bit rough. And Grimm was a good-natured fella and hardly ever got on anybody.
All right, who of the three, who would you say was the best strategist or the best baseball mind, as it were?
McCarthy, by far.
By far. And if you had to rank him, McCarthy first, and then who would be next in terms of his baseball strategy?
Well, wouldn't be much different between Hornsby and Grimm. They played about the same type of baseball.
All right. Question number 8. Comment briefly on the following teammates of yours in regard to their skills as players, their personalities, and any peculiarities. And we got a long list of them. Papa, you can start with Steve O'Neill.
Steve O'Neill was catcher for Cleveland when I joined him there. And he was a good catcher. He was slow, and he threw pretty good. And
easy going. What kind of person?
He's a big Irishman, and he kind of easygoing fellow.
All right. Stan Kovaleski.
Stan Kovaleski was a great spitball pitcher, and he won 2 or 3 games in that 1920 World Series. I've forgotten 2. I know he won 2.
All right. What was he, an easygoing sort of?
Yes, he never did say anything. Whenever they asked him, say, how you going to pitch to this fella, he said, I'm going to fire that spitter in there.
All right, what about George Uhle?
George Uhle was just starting off while I was there, and he got to be a good pitcher later on after I left.
All right, now you've got to say a lot about the next fella. It's Joe Sewell.
Joe's got more records than anybody. And I started off playing with Joe Shields. He was playing second base, and I was playing shortstop at the University of Alabama. And then when he switched us up there, when I went up there, Joe was playing short, and I never had played second. So that was another reason that I didn't do so good on second base.
Yeah, I think you have to tell them how long you've known one another, Papa, when you met.
Oh, I met Joe Searle he entered Alabama a year before me, and we came up there for fall practice for football, and he played football also. And I remember he came up there, and we were sitting out there in front of the dormitories, and somebody introduced him to him. We stood around a little while. He said, Rat Steve, come here. And then he said, bend over. And I bent over, and he jumped up on my back. He said, let's go up on the third stoop. So that's where I met Joe.
And How many arguments have you all had? How many arguments have you all had in 63 years?
I don't think we had maybe one argument. I missed the sign down. He was hitting behind me at first base, and he got on me, and we jawed a little bit, but didn't last any time. Went on home together.
All right. After Joe Sewell, let's see. Bill Wamsgans.
Wamsgans was a good bunter, and he's a good second baseman. He could make that play, run over the bag and jump up and throw to first base. And he was a good ball player. He didn't hit much. I don't know. I think maybe around 260 or something like that. That, which is pretty good now.
All right. And you got to talk about Sarge Bagby.
Jim Bagby had a great year in 1920. I think he won 31 games, and he had a great curveball. Had one was a fast curve, and one was a good breaking curve. And I would think he was only there 1 year with me.
All right. And Joe Wood.
Smokey Joe Wood was a great pitcher when he was with Boston. And he came over there with Speaker, and he played the outfield. He played against left-hand pitchers, and Elmer Smith played against right-hand pitchers. They made a good combination.
All right, and old Hack Wilson.
Old Hack was a good ball player. A lot of them always just dwell on when he his nightlife, but he was a good outfielder, and it was. Go back on the ball good, had a good arm, and come in, slide on his stomach, and catch those little pop fly. And as you know, he hit 56 home runs.
Did he have pretty good speed?
He had good speed. Had good speed. Yeah, had good speed.
All right. Let's talk about Gabby Hartnett.
Gabby, in my opinion, was the best catcher while I was up there. And he had a great arm, except 1 year. He hurt his arm. That was in 1929. And they bought Zach Taylor from Boston, I think. And we went ahead to win the pennant in 29. And Gabby just pinch hit most of the year.
Was Gabby pretty good at handling pitchers? Was he pretty good at handling pitchers?
Yeah, he was good at handling pitching and had a great arm. Nobody hardly ever ran on him.
All right. How about Charlie Root?
Charlie Root won over 20 games that by the second year while I was there, and he had a good sidearm fastball and fair curve, not too good a curve, but he was a nice fella.
And what about Guy Bush?
Guy Bush was from Mississippi, and when I first went there, he only had a fastball, threw a fastball, but... he developed a screwball late on and was a good pitcher.
Could he control the screwball?
Yeah, he got the screwball in there pretty good, yeah.
Okay. Kai Kai Kyler.
Kai Kai Kyler had a lot of ability. He could run, he could throw, and hit pretty good and stole a lot of bases my first year or two up there.
What sort of personality was he, Papa? What was he like?
Well, I couldn't describe him. He was a nice fella. He hardly ever said anything bad about anybody. Didn't use any profane language.
He wasn't with that group that had the nightlife, was he?
No, no. He wasn't, and he would hardly ever take a glass of beer.
Well, what about the next guy, Pat Malone? He was one of those.
Pat Malone and Hack Wilson kind of ran out together and got in a few skirmishes.
Tell us about Pat Malone as a pitcher.
Pat Malone was off for a while. I played against him down in the American Association. And he got his control. He had a good fastball and a good curve. And he's got a good record. I've forgotten what his record is.
All right, and Lon Warnke.
Warnke came up while I was there. He came up from down in Arkansas, and he had a good curveball and a good fastball. And after he got through baseball, He was an umpire.
And a pretty good one, I think, wasn't he?
I think it was.
All right, what about Burley Grimes?
Oh, Stubble Beard, as they called him. He was a spitball pitcher, and he was a good one. And he's still up there in the Hall of Fame now as one of the fellows that took hip voted on bring getting them in.
He must have had something besides a spitball, didn't he?
Well, yeah, he had a pretty good fastball, and he'd knock you down, too, for a little bit. You couldn't take a toe hold on him.
All right. And Billy Herman.
Billy came up when I was there from down in Louisville, and he got to be a good second baseman. Had a good arm and a good hit-and-run man.
Right, we went through all those, and let's see, we're at question number 9. All right, we'll... All right. How funny was Charlie Grimm? Can you give some examples?
Well, I can't think of any examples now, but Charlie was very original and be on the bench a lot of time, take up the bat, the ball bag, and play it like an accordion. That's one thing he used to do, and I don't think remember the others now.
How about on train trips?
Well,
anything special on train trips?
We used to play hearts or something, and he'd be getting the heart game with us.
All right. The 1929 World Series. Comment on the Athletics' 10-run inning in the fourth game. How could it happen? If Root had held that 8-run lead and Malone his 2-0 lead in the bottom of the ninth the next day, the Cubs should have won the series, right?
That's right. They got all the breaks in that 10-run. I used to know play by play how it was, but I remember two or three plays that happened that made a big difference. Had a double play ball hit to McMillan at third base. It bounced over his head, over his glove, And two balls hit to Hack Wilson in center field in the sun, and one of them went for a home run. Mule Hash hit, and bounced in front of Hack and got away from him. Kyle ran it down in center field. And they hit good, too, though. They had some good hitting. And I don't remember exactly how it was.
Did Charlie just have a bad day? Charlie Root just have a bad day? Wasn't he pitching?
Well, he was pitching, and I don't know. Maybe he'd done better if he left him in there, but that's second guessing. Yeah. I don't know. We pitched 5 or 6. Blake and Neff and Malone was the last pitch.
I remember.
Okay, what about Malone and the next day when it was 2-0 in the bottom of the ninth, and what, you lost it?
We lost it. I think, I remember Bing Miller hit a line drive to right center and scored a run or two, and I don't know exactly how it happened, but we got beat 3-1, I believe, something like
three,
that.
3-2, maybe. All right, the 11th question was, how about the bitterness between the teams in the 1932 series, and did Ruth really call his shot?
Well, we heard that asked a lot of times. One thing our bench got on Babe Ruth was riding him by something. He was riding the bench because what was that boy named shortstop was there, and we didn't give him but a half a share. Can't think of his name right now. In the series, and didn't give him but a half a share of World Series money, and Babe and them were mad because he had played shortstop for them before they let him go, and he went down to minor league, and the Cubs brought him back. And far as the one that hit the center field, Joe Silver was hitting right in front of him, and he said that he pointed to his center field. But I don't know what he was. He put up his fingers, and I don't know for sure, but I know it hit over the scoreboard. I was in left field.
Did you see him when he supposedly pointed, Papa? Did you notice him?
I couldn't tell about it.
From that
No.
All right. Let's see. Question 12. What was your best game ever in the majors? Your greatest thrill and the toughest pitcher for you to hit? And then you got to tell us about some of the easiest pitchers to hit. Your best game.
Well, I can't remember the best game. I had several games where I hit got three or four hits. But the best pitcher against me was Dazzy Vance. And what is the other question?
Well, let me see here. Your greatest thrill. What was the
greatest thrill was playing in two World Series, 1929 and 1932.
Yeah, what was the series share in those days, Papa?
I think it was around $4,000 losing.
For losing, $4,000 for losing. What did the winners get? Do you remember?
The winners got about $6,000.
About $6,000. All right. Now, what you haven't told us though is, who were some of the easier pitchers to hit?
It wasn't any easy ones up there.
I don't believe that. Now, we've got to get a story in here that you told me one time, and that was what Dizzy Dean made some comment to his catcher. You got to tell us about that.
That was Jimmy Wilson was catching for the St. Louis Cardinals, and Diz was pitching, and he was telling Wilson, he said, I believe he could slow up on me, give me a change of pace. Jimmy Wilson was telling me this late on. So I came up to bat and wasn't anybody on base, and Dizzy was pitching. And Jimmy went out and told himself, well, now here it won't make much difference if he hits one now. So if you want to throw that change of pace, go ahead and throw it. So he threw it, and I hit it over the left field fence.
That's good. Now, you still hadn't told. There must have been a pitcher or two that you could hit better than Diz or some of those.
I liked hitting any of those left-hand pitches.
Oh, all right. So he liked the lefties. All right. 13. Can you name the best players you ever saw in either league at each position, including a left-handed and a right-handed pitcher?
Well, the pitchers I'd pitch, I mentioned Moses and Grove and Walter Johnson, the two pitchers, left hand and right hand. And the players, I guess, it'd be pretty hard to make. Joey Sisler on first base, maybe Gary. Second base would be Eddie Collins. I put Joe Sewell on shortstop and Pi Trainer on third.
And what about your outfield?
Well, outfielders, I'd put Cobb, Speaker, and Ruth.
And your catcher?
Catcher, I'll put Harden as catcher.
All right. In connection with these questions, I've got to ask you, where would you put a left-hander like Warren Spahn?
Oh, Warren, I never did see Warren pitch except on television or something, but he must have been pretty good. He couldn't hardly keep him off of some team.
Or Feller as a right.
That Feller, I didn't see those fellas pitch. They pitched after I was out of the league.
All right. Would you let Ted Williams sit on the bench at least with those three outfielders?
He had a pretty good record. It'd be pretty hard to put him in. I make him the extra outfielder.
All right, let's see. Can you think of some amusing or unusual plays or incidents? Who were some of the real characters in the game in your day, like Rabbit Marinville?
Yeah.
Well, Rabbit, he was a good little shortstop. He was a little fella. And his folks didn't want him to play baseball, but he was playing. And one thing, at the last part of his career, he got so he would drink a little bit, and some of them got after him for drinking. He said, that aspirin I take makes me sick every time.
What about, what about the Gas House Gang with people like Pepper Martin?
Well, they had the Gas House Gang was a good bunch of ball players, old Pepper Martin and
Hugh Dean.
Diz and what's the other
Paul?
Diz and Paul Dean. Yeah, and I can't think of who's the catcher now. I think Jimmy Wilson and Voyager Davis, I expect, were the catchers at one time there. And Douthat was the center fielder, I think. I can't remember exactly. Oh, Hafey, Chick Hafey was a good ball player. Played right field, had a great arm.
Did you ever see a triple play?
Yes, they had a triple play. I didn't see this play. Wormsgast made in 1920 World Series, but I heard him talking about it. There was two men on base, and I think this fellow, left-hand hitter, hit a line drive over second base, and Wormsgast ran over and caught it, stepped on the bag and got that man, and this other man ran down to him, and he touched him.
Did you ever in your years of Major League Baseball ever see one base runner outrun the base runner in front of him or anything like that?
No, I don't believe that I ever saw anybody, but I heard of them while I'm running over the home plate. Third baseman ran him over the home plate.
All right. I think this would qualify. You talked at one time about some of the experiences when you were traveling on the train and some of the characters, including at least one who threw firecrackers out the window.
That was Pat Malone. I think we'd been in Pittsburgh or something. We were leaving there, and he had those firecrackers that would shoot twice, you know, double barrel. And he was throwing them out on top of the houses as was leaving there on the train.
Y'all never played little cards on the train, did you?
Yes, we used to play hearts. McCarthy wouldn't let us play poker. He didn't want no poker and no crap shooting. If they ever had any, I didn't ever see it.
All right. What about the Cub fans? Are they among the greatest and most loyal?
I think the Cub fans certainly were good to me while I was there, and they were great, and I appreciated staying there 9 years. Enjoyed every bit of the time.
Some of them are still pretty loyal.
Yeah, I imagine.
You hear from a lot of them.
After you finished playing in the majors in 1934, what did you do after that?
I went down to Indianapolis and signed with them and played 1 year down there with them. I hit about 340. Then Birmingham offered me a job managing in Birmingham, and I came there and managed 2 years. First year we finished third and went over to Tulsa in the Texas League, and they beat us over there. And then next year I finished about fifth, and they fired me.
How did you enjoy managing as opposed to playing, Bob?
I'd rather play. I didn't like that responsibility much. I always wanted to be a coach, but I never did get a job as a coach.
All right. Let's see, though. After that, did you do some high school coaching after that, or did you go in the lumber business right after that?
I think I coached in high school 2 years down in a little place named Akron, and then I went in the lumber business with a fella. I did coach. Yeah, that's right. I did have a semi-pro team right here in Tuscaloosa, and we went over to Wichita coming one game of winning the championship over there.
Good heaven. Did you enjoy coaching football more than baseball?
No, I just had a small team. We didn't have nothing. I had to scrimmage against them every day. Whenever we scrimmage, I'd have to play on the other side.
Well, that kept you in condition. Now, this doesn't have to do with baseball, but I've got to get you to tell a story anyway. When you were coaching high school football, and the coach from Marion Institute, which was really a college prep school or junior college school, called you up, and he wanted to get a game going between your little high school team and his team, and I think you had one. Tell us about that.
Well, yeah, the old boy down there was in there. He was an Alabama boy, and he said he wanted to play. I said, heck, I ain't got but 13 men. And he said, well, I tell you what you do. I'll play and you play. So I said, all right, come on. So they came up to Akron and played, and we beat them 20-some or 30, I forgot, to 7. I played the whole game.
Well, that's because you were in good condition then.
Yeah.
Now, let's see. Where were we? Question number 17. How disappointing is it to you that with your 14 seasons, 1,310 games, 336 career batting average, 378 average, and 2 World Series, you still haven't been voted into the Hall of Fame?
Well, of course, everybody would like to get into the Hall of Fame up there. I was watching them this year. But if they're going to talk as long as Happy Chandler talked and Frank Rawson, I don't know whether I want to go or not. But I'm not worrying about it. It doesn't worry me at all. I really don't know. I guess if you don't get me in pretty soon, I won't be able to go.
All right. Let's see. Question 18. What do you think of the artificial surfaces that they have in many stadiums today? And what do you think about night baseball? And then we're going to have to talk about the rise of relief specialists. And then finally, the free agency. But first, we need to know about those artificial surfaces.
Well, since I didn't play on them, I don't know. It seems like it's faster than the real date and the grass.
Would have liked to have played on?
Well, yeah, I think you probably would get more hits. The ball would get through the infield better. I think he'd hit a little more in that. And what is that other question?
About night baseball.
Night baseball, I would think, is a little harder to hit. I played 2 years of night baseball in the minor league. Indianapolis. That high hard one got there before you were ready for it. It sure did. And what is that other question?
All right, we need to know about what you think of the kind of relief specialists they have today as opposed to in your day.
Well, it didn't have as many relief fellows, in my day. Most of them went the whole game. The pitchers pitched the whole game. Now, the pitchers they have now, I forget the name of that boy who pitched for Pittsburgh, had a fork ball. And this Suter has throws some kind of drop ball, like a fork ball. I don't know what it is, fingers somewhere.
Split
fingers ball, yeah. So I imagine the relief pitchers are better now than they were then. As a whole, the boys are bigger and stronger and faster, but I don't know whether they play as hard as we did.
Do you think the relief specialists have really kind of changed the game from what it was when you played?
Well, in a way they have, but we had some good relief pitchers way back by the end of my career. But before that, we didn't have more than about one fella down in the bullpen.
All right, now you got to talk about the free agency and I guess all that big money these folks make these days.
I'm sorry I'm not in there for that big money, but I'm not going to worry about that either. And the free agency, I think they hurt the owners when they let that pass. And I don't know how they're going to get along, but of course I'm always for the ball player.
All right. Number 19. What were your feelings about the Wrigleys and the front office during your playing days in Chicago? And then tell me a little bit about Judge Landis.
Mr. William Wrigley, the one that started the Gum. He was a great fellow and used to come and sit down on the bench. But P.K. didn't take too much interest, in my opinion. He liked mechanics and everything. And Judge Landis was a stern old fella. I remember one time that he called O'Doul and me up because we had let Herb Hunter have some money to go to Japan on. And I didn't know anything about it, and I loaned him some money. He had taken us over there a few years before, and we had a good time and played a lot of baseball over there, by 22, I think it was. And he wanted to know, and we just told him what it was. I told him, I said, I just loaned him the money, and Herb Hunter did bring us back some kimonos.
All right. Let's see. What did baseball mean to the players in your day? Do you think it's the same with the players of today?
In my day, it meant a living for them. There's always somebody standing back behind wanting to take your job. I guess that's true today, even if the salaries are 1,000 pounds more than they were in my day.
Do you think it was more competitive when you played? There were a lot more minor league teams and a lot of people scratching to get up there. Do you think it was more competitive?
Yes, that's the reason I think that that the ball players were better then. They had 40 or 50 minor league clubs where they have a few now. I don't know exactly how many, 5 or 6, I think, something like that. They had more chance to play. They're taking fellas out of college now and don't have much more experience. Yeah, of course, I was lucky to stay up there since I went out fresh straight from college.
All right. Well, let me check and see how much time we've got left on here. We're going to have to turn that tape over.
We ain't got but one side?
So far.
Well, we've got enough of it. It's not over, ain't it?
Yeah, it is. But there's a couple questions I've got to ask you.
Well, we've got
plenty of tape. Papa, I want to know about whether or not you ever had any run-ins with umpires. And if you did have any run-ins, what was the most serious one?
No, I never did have any run-ins with them. I never did question them. I figured I'd get more from them by not getting after them and riding them than I would by just letting them go ahead and talk to them and not turn around and talk to the umpire behind the plate.
You never ever said anything in a bad call?
No, I never said nothing except I said, I think you missed that. And one time I said to Ainsworth Smith, he was a referee, umpire, and I said, I think you missed that one, Eddie. And he said, well, you're allowed to miss 11.
All right. I don't know where he got that number 11.
You don't think that